Hey y'all, what's going on?
Yeah.
Had to be unenthusiastic again so I didn't get made fun of. Now, well, because now I have a complex.
They got a complex? No, just
so. So it's like.
No, man.
Because everything I do, it's weird or wrong or whatever.
So listen to her attitude.
What? That's not true. Yes, it is.
It's in your mind.
Yeah, okay.
It's in your mind.
Yeah. I know how you do.
I'm just teasing. Stop it.
Yeah. All right. Stop. So today we're talking about, this should be like kind of interesting because we're not exactly doing a movie. We're doing a Netflix series. Hi, Pokey.
Yeah. Pokey comes running in.
What we were doing, because remember somebody said that we needed to watch, there was a series on Netflix about the Pinkertons.
Yeah.
And so we went to Netflix last night to look for it. I found out subsequently that it's actually not on Netflix anymore.
Okay.
So I don't know if we can find it someplace else. But while we went to Netflix, we noticed that they had dropped the second season of The Movies That Made Us.
Yeah, so we saw the second season.
So we watched the second. It's only four episodes. They're about 45, 48 minutes long a piece. So we just sat there and watched all four of them, even though I was super tired. But I managed to like stay awake for all of them.
Yeah, it was Back to the Future.
That was the first one.
Pretty Woman.
Jurassic Park, and Forrest Gump were the four that were covered.
Yeah. Really, to me, the only interesting ones, of course, were Back to the Future and Jurassic Park. The other ones I thought were kind of boring. But it's still a good series.
I'm not a big fan of Forrest Gump, like the movie, and I liked Pretty Woman, but I haven't seen it in so long that it's like I barely remembered anything about it. But I'm kind of still interested in, because I'm just interested in like people that write the scripts. I'm interested in people that do special effects. I'm interested in like all the kind of stories behind the movies.
Yeah.
So even if it's a movie I'm not really that into, I still find it interesting because I like seeing like all the people.
Pretty Woman was bullshit. total bullshit. You got this fucking billionaire fucking business mogul hooks up with a fucking Hollywood street hooker and then ends up marrying her, I think. Eventually, didn't he? Yeah.
Wait, did he marry her then? It's been so long since I've seen Pretty Woman.
I think he did
Woman.
Eventually. He was in love with her. Total bullshit. Total bullshit. Would never happen.
Well, it was a rom-com.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about that, and here was something that I didn't know, was that Pretty Woman was not only one of the first kind of like, I don't want to say like adult movies, not adult like a porn movie, but like a more adult oriented. What are you doing, Poke?
She's trying to pull shit off the chair. Hey, you leave it alone, okay?
Stop it, Pokey. Right, she's like, no one's paying attention to me. I have to destroy
to pull
something.
Shit off the chair. Yeah,
she has to destroy something. It's like no one's paying attention. You're so cute, Pokey. We know we love you. But yeah, so it was so Disney had wanted to go off into like Touchstone. So this was when they started, they're doing their offshoot Touchstone because they were kind of just known for doing like animated movies, right? Or for kids movies. So they wanted another thing where they could do like, movies for adults, obviously. So this was one of the first ones that they put into production. So they were talking to the guy that wrote the original screenplay, which was called 3000. What was the first thing I thought of was like 300, like the gladiators. I'm like, okay, that's weird. But I guess it was because $3,000 was like how much he paid her like to spend the week. So I had forgotten about that too. But when he wrote the screenplay, it was supposed to be like a gritty, serious, I mean, the bones of the story were the same, like billionaire corporate raider dude, hires a prostitute for a week and then, you know, shenanigans ensue. But it was much darker. And so I think like the more they went into it, like the funnier it got. And it was just kind of like the thing that amazes me, I think, about this show is that, and particularly the one about Back to the Future, right? Because that was like the first one and that was like the best one because that's the movie that I like the best out of all the ones that they did. And it's funny to think now because Back to the Future is kind of like one of the most perfect movies ever made, right? Of any kind or any era.
Actually, the trilogy, too.
Yeah, but I mean, just in the context of the show where they were talking about the first movie, I was kind of like, and so it's kind of interesting to think how long that it took to get it made, how many iterations it went through, how many problems they had, how many times it wasn't gonna get made, how many times, like, you know what I mean? And it's like all the fucking stupid, like, studio interference. No, we need to call it Spaceman from Pluto. The whole thing, which I think most people that know about Back to the Future know that Michael J. Fox, who was actually their first choice for the movie, couldn't do it because he was doing Family Ties. So they got Eric Stoltz instead. And then they had shot, like, 6 weeks of the movie?
Yeah.
And then they were like, okay, well, Eric Stoltz isn't working out.
He was taking it too seriously.
Yeah, it's like, I don't think that he got...
Well, he understand the tone.
Well, yeah, he kind of saw it more, which if you think about it, he kind of saw it more as like a sad existential type of, which like I said, you could kind of look at it that way if you wanted to, but they were trying to do like a more lighthearted comedy thing, and Eric Stoltz was kind of playing it serious, and it wasn't really, like, tonally, it wasn't really working out, so then finally they got Michael J. Fox to do it, and so, like, you know, and I was like, the whole scene where I was like stressed out, it's like, it happened a long time ago, but they were just kind of like, and then we had to tell Eric Stoltz that he was like essentially fired after 6 weeks of work, but they said that he was actually kind of relieved because I guess he wasn't having that great a time either. So yeah, so there was that whole thing. And that's the thing, like, Eric Stoltz is like a really good actor, but he's usually in more serious kind of stuff. You know, I mean, the reason they got him second, well, one of the executives like wanted him because he'd been in that movie Mask with Cher, where he was, you know, he had that, like, he was disabled and everything. Rocky Dennis, it's, like, based on a real person. And he was really good in that. And he was, like, in, shit, man, what was that other? It was, like, Pretty in Pink, but gender swapped. Some Kind of Wonderful. He was in that, like, the John Hughes movie. And he was really good in that, which was kind of a comedy, but more of, like, a romantic type of thing, like John Hughes did. So he was good in that. So I could see how it wasn't really working out. I also laughed at all the stuff they were saying about Chris, about Crispin Glover.
She's chewing on shit. And she's doing this shit to get a pageant.
Yeah. She always chews.
Now she's running.
If she starts chewing, like, just take this bottle of Febreze and like threaten. Don't spray her with it.
She knows it goes. She knows that
it hisses.
I'm gonna hit you with it. Oh, she's running.
She saw it. You don't even have to spray it because I've never sprayed her with it. I would never do that.
She knows it hisses though.
But sometimes if she starts chewing on like a power cord or something like that, and I have to keep her from doing it, so I'll spray it like over there, like psh, like that, and she's just like, no, and she doesn't like that noise.
She's chewing on the drinking straw, the drinking cable of the fucking hydration system. Out of the rucksack.
Oh, okay.
And like, that was an expensive fucking canteen.
She's the chewingest little kitty.
She just chews on shit,
Well, then it's like, and I have like a big bag full of like chew sticks that I give her. And she chews on them because they're like chicken flavored, but it's like, she'll chew on that and she'll be like, well, I'm just going to chew on all the things. Because apparently I can chew on that and all these other things. But yeah, so the thing that amazed me, like I said, was that Back to the Future was another one that, because I feel like Robert Zemeckis and like the other dude, they called him the Bobs, like on the show, right? And they had written it, or he had the idea, like when he was still back in film school, or like when he was just out of film school or some shit like that. And I think the original ending of Back to the Future, wasn't it like how Doc Brown, who was called Professor Brown in the original version, was gonna get the power to send Marty back to the future was from a nuclear test.
An A-bomb test. Yeah, back in the 50s. Sure.
Yeah, and so I guess they were kind of going to do that, but then, like, people thought it was too dark, and then, like, they...
I think because Doc Brown died in it, didn't he?
I don't remember if he died in it or not.
I think he died in the explosion.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, because this was another one that had, like, a much darker ending, I guess. Because it's like, you know, everybody got kind of blown up. Like, didn't everybody get kind of blown up at the end? I think. Well, I saw the storyboards.
They showed the storyboard, and I think it showed fucking Doc Brown's fucking face melting, like, out of Indiana Jones when they opened the fucking...
the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would have been quite a different movie. But yeah, so there was that. And there was also, I think when he went back to the future, that he said it was supposed to look like super futuristic, like the movie Metropolis. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
the World Fair back
in 1930. Like, his he never had lived or anything. It was going to be very different. But what they ended up with is probably one of the most American movies of all times.
And I think that they just ended up with the lightning strike at the end. They kind of just did that because it was cheaper. Because the budget got cut?
Yeah, because they already had a set where they could do that. And lightning bolt makes sense, though.
Yeah, and it's like way less soul-crushing than an A-bomb that kills a bunch of people.
Yeah, and that wouldn't... Well, it was on a test range.
Yeah.
It wasn't an A-bomb fucking, you know, launched into a neighborhood or anything. Just that evidently they were going to sneak out on the test range somehow and get the power of that A-bomb and channel it into the damn flux capacitor.
Yeah.
But by looking at the storyboards, Doc Brown didn't survive.
That's true. All
right, so...
And Louis said, didn't the terrorists kill Doc Brown? Well, they did, but then...
Now, he went back and got
warned. But then
warned.
He went back and got warned about
and he
it.
He was wearing a bulletproof vest that stopped it.
Yeah.
Stopped the AK rounds. He pretended to be dead.
Yeah. Conor Vatslan said Eric Stoltz did The Fly, too. It was not a bad movie. Yeah, I agree. Like, The Fly 2 was actually better than it had any right to be. Another thing, too, was that the original time machine in the original Back to the Future script was supposed to be made out of a refrigerator. I don't know how that was going to work.
Yeah, well, that ended up being in Indiana Jones 4 or 5.
Yeah.
What was it? 4,
the Crystal
I guess.
Skull.
Crystal Skull.
That's the fourth one.
I think that
wasn't a time machine, but he just hid in it.
No, like, yeah, but I think that was supposed to be an homage to the original Back to the Future
script. It might have been,
because Steven Spielberg and all those guys were in on that movie. It's one of the reasons why that movie feels like a Spielberg movie, because he was fucking involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it does feel like a Spielberg movie. He was one of the guys working on it. I think he did a lot. He came up with a lot of the ideas that ended up in the movie, too. They were all friends hanging out, talking about it.
Yeah. I mean, Steven Spielberg, honestly, because Robert Zemeckis, he came out of film school. And I think, like, him and the other Bob, they wrote that movie 1941 that Steven Spielberg made. But that was, like, a big flop, right?
Yeah.
So Steven
Which
Spielberg...
Which was a good movie, though.
It was, actually. I remember it being pretty good.
John Belushi fighting a P-47 Tomahawk.
Yeah, that's right. See, I remember that being a good movie. It's
it
doesn't mean anything if it was a flop.
No, it's a good movie.
Sometimes movies that are flops deserve to be, but sometimes they totally don't. So Steven Spielberg was, like, friends with Bob Zemeckis, like, right when Bob Zemeckis was out of film school. And the interesting thing was Robert Zemeckis, like, he made a bunch of movies that were pretty much all flops. Like, he made, like, a string of, like, 3 or 4 of them.
Yeah, Krussel was in one of them called...
Used Cars.
Used Cars, yeah.
Yeah, and then, so...
Okay, I told you no. Hey.
So the fact that they were willing to give him another chance, though, I mean, the reason that they gave him Back to the Future was because he had done Romancing the Stone, which they only gave him because they didn't think that movie was going to do very well. So they're like, hey, give it to that guy that makes all the flops. And he made it, and it was, like, this massive success. Yes. And honestly, I really liked Romancing the Stone.
I want to see that one again.
I saw it, like, a zillion times when I was a kid.
They played it over and over again on cable.
It was on cable all the time.
I remember liking it.
Yeah, it was good.
It was kind of like Indiana Jones, but, you know.
Yeah, like an adventure type.
Yeah, but in the 80s.
But, like, a romantic comedy also.
Yeah.
Kind of, but, like, wacky, but also adventure.
I have to see it again.
Yeah, and it was on... God, it was on Hulu or Amazon Prime, because I remember scrolling through and I'd be like, oh man, I want to watch that again because I haven't seen it in such a long time.
Out of the movies that they did on the series, though, I would just say Back to the Future was the most interesting one. To a certain extent, Jurassic Park. Some people don't like that movie. I remember liking it in the context of the time. It's been a long time since I've seen Jurassic Park. When it came out, I was... amazed. I saw it in the theater.
Well, everyone was amazed by it.
Now, it was kind of not a complicated movie. It was real kind of shallow. You know, it wasn't something that really stuck with you.
Well, it was just like a monster movie.
Just a monster movie.
But that's okay.
Yeah, but I remember having a good time in the theater with it. And it was kind of like watching Jumanji or some shit like that. Like some of the Jumanji ones, I saw, that was pretty cool. That Jumanji 2, I've only seen the second one. We had a good time.
Yeah, they're just fun.
Just fun movies.
Just fun popcorn movies like they call them. There's nothing wrong with that.
No.
And it's just kind of like, the thing that they kind of went into a lot of on Jurassic Park was, you know, the special effects, obviously. Because, you know, I think most people know, but it's like what they were going to do. Yes, they built these big, massive puppets and stuff like that, you know, for close-up shots and whatnot. And they even built that T-Rex, like, life-size. If it wasn't going to be, like, moving around and shit. So that is actually there. It's a big puppet, like an animatronic. But they were going to do, because this, you know, it was the 90s, early 90s, so they didn't really have really good CGI. So they were originally going to do all the dinosaurs were going to be stop motion, and, like, Phil Tippett was going to do it. And so he did a bunch of stuff, and then Steven Spielberg is like, oh, it's pretty good, but they had to, like, add motion blur to it, like, in post-production, so to make it look more realistic. And even then, like, Steven Spielberg was like, I don't know, it still looks, like, a little bit jerky. Although they showed some of the special effects reels from, you know, from the stop motion, and it actually looked pretty good, I thought.
Yeah.
But, you know, but then they had these two guys that were from Industrial Light and Magic, and they were basically on the sly. They were just gonna like, we're gonna figure out how to do like realistic dinosaurs in CGI, which had never been done before. They had done other things in CGI, but not like a something that was supposed to look like a real animal. So it took them a really, really long time to do it, but they finally did it, and they kind of like, they kind of had to go about it in an underhanded sort of fashion where it's like they had all the producers and stuff, and then like they kind of snuck their little reel in there for them to see it, and they were just kind of like, oh, okay, well, that's what we're doing because that looks amazing. So it was just kind of funny. Like the dude that did the that figured out how to do the CGI dinosaurs, he seemed like kind of what's the word that I want to use? Don't.
No, I'm just threatening this. It didn't hiss. I pulled the trigger on it and it didn't hiss. It's dead. Oh, there it goes.
Yeah. Oh, God. Now you're getting it all in my. You got it all in my drink.
I thought it was dead.
No, it's not empty.
Okay.
It's just kind of like, even the empty ones, I keep them in here because it's like, all I have to do is take it out and she's like, oh shit, I'm in trouble. Because she doesn't like anything that makes, like, she does, every time I do my hairspray like, she just, like, she doesn't like that.
Yeah, they hiss.
Yeah.
Well, imagine if somebody pulled something out that screamed. Like, don't scream at me. Like, fun.
Yeah, I guess it's or like one of those stupid, like, air horns or, like, a vuvuzela or something.
Yeah. That's like she's doing that to fuck with me, though. She went over there and says, I'm going to bite it. She threatened to bite it.
Well, she knows that's how she gets attention. Yeah, she's like, oh, if I do something bad, then Daddy will yell at me and he'll come over here and, like, play with me.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Because you do it. So she knows it works.
Yeah, she
you
know manipulates me. Manipulates me.
Oh, my God.
But the, I would say, seeing the Back to the Future one was the best one. Somebody sent me the entire trilogy. I still got it sealed. I want to watch that again. Seeing that thing made me want to watch all three of them.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We ought to do a show on all three of them, just in one. Because, really, it's very rare that a trilogy is perfect. That one is actually a perfect trilogy. Each movie is perfect. They're all good.
And and each movie is its own thing, but they're all thematically linked, which I think is really cool.
It's like watching this continuation of the same world. And now some people would say, well, that third one wasn't that. No, it is. That third one is fucking great. The thing is that the third one, really, you don't really appreciate it until you start getting older. When you're in your 40s or so and above, the third one is a lot better because it's more of a story about Doc Brown.
Yeah.
And about how Doc Brown... It's a completion of Doc Brown's story arc, you know. And Doc's older. So, you know, the story itself is not going to appeal that much to young guys. It didn't really appeal to me that much when it first came out. But now that I've gotten older, I appreciate it a lot more. They were all great movies. And like I said, it's very rare that a trilogy holds up. I mean, even Star Wars, which is right underneath there. And Return of the Jedi had a few problems in there. You know, fucking the Ewok theme songs and fucking the goofy shit. Some of that shit got real fucking goofy. You know, the best Star Wars movie, I mean, everybody's going to tell you the best Star Wars movie is Empire Strikes Back. I mean,
well, everybody knows that.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's going to argue with that.
George Lucas really didn't have a whole lot to do with that. You know, it was directed by some other guy. That was directed by the guy that did fucking RoboCop 2.
Yeah.
Which RoboCop 2 is a cool movie, too. A lot of people don't appreciate that one as much as they should. RoboCop 1 is a fucking masterpiece. That fucker was insane. I'm getting off topic, though.
Yeah, well, but, what else is new? I wanted to say, though, that even though I'm not a big fan of Forrest Gump, the movie, like, I think I kind of liked it the first time I saw it, but then, like, subsequent times, I'm like, man, this is an actual garbage fire.
It's a garbage
fire. It's like boomer porn, and I'm just kind of like, I'm not about it. Like, as I get older, I didn't really like it as much, but I had forgotten, I just saw, it's funny, because I just watched, if you guys, I really like this channel, Dominic Noble. And he does a series called Lost in Adaptation, and he talks about, like, all the differences. Like, they're really these in-depth videos, like, the differences between, like, the book and the movie. And he did one very recently on, and it might be just for patrons only, because I'm on his Patreon, but he did one on Forrest Gump, like, the movie, or the book by Winston Groom. And I think I read that book like a long time ago read part of it because I remember like one of my family members or something like had it laying around. And so I was kind of reading it and I had forgotten how fucking batshit insane that fucking book is. I mean, the movie is sort of the same, but the movie is like a lot different. They made a lot of changes. I mean, in the fucking book, like he had an orangutan at one point, like he goes to the fucking moon. It's like, there's just, and he's like a big fat guy. And also the thing about the Forrest Gump in the book is that he's kind of a dick. And he's kind of like, cause you know, in the movie, he's kind of like this sweet, good natured, you know, mentally challenged man. Whereas in the book, it seemed like he says he's an idiot, but he seems to be, like, smarter than, like, he's making people think he's dumb. That was the impression that I got. So he's kind of, like, he's kind of an asshole in the book. So they made him, like, a lot nicer in the movie, and they took a lot of the weirder shit out. Because I think they did think about putting the orangutan in there, and then everybody's like, no,
absolutely, he goes to the moon in the book. Not.
That's what I just said that, like, a couple minutes ago.
It's pretty weird.
Like, just crazy, crazy shit, like, happens in the book. Like, yes, some of the stuff that happened in the movie happened in the book, too, but there was so much more. And, like, listening to, like, when I was listening to Dominic Noble talking about the book, I was just like, oh, my God, I forgot how fucking insane this book is. Now, even on the show, like, one of the producers or, you know, the executives or something was just saying, for some reason, they're like, they had the book, and I think even before it was published, like, they were, you know, people were optioning, like, screenplays, and they had Winston Groom, the guy that wrote the book, they had him write a screenplay, but they didn't love it because it was, like, too close to the book, so they had, like, other people do it, which is pretty standard procedure, and so they said it sat in a box, and then somebody picked it up and really dug it, but it seemed like, I don't know, like, this executive was just like, you know, it's really not a very good book. You know what I mean? But I guess there was just something about it that was, like, really compelling for people.
Well, it wasn't a good movie either. I mean, it was kind of entertaining to watch it in the theater. I saw it in the theater when it came out.
I might have. I can't remember if I saw it in the theater.
It was entertaining, but then it ended, and I was like, what the fuck did I just see? What did that mean? You know, and it didn't have a meaning. It was just mundane people get everything. I mean, there was no,
or just it was almost kind of like, you know, talking about just the movie more than the book, but the movie was kind of more like, it was almost kind of like a holy fool narrative where he was just, here's this guy who is sweet natured, but he doesn't know any better, and he just somehow wanders into all these, like, amazing epic adventures. I don't think it has any deeper meaning than that.
No, it was kind of ironic. You had all these boomers that were just loving it, and they were kind of holding it up as some kind of a moralistic tale. But to me, the only morals I can make out of it is that you can be a loser and still win. Because he was a loser.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't anything about it.
Yeah, great.
And I think a lot of people imagine themselves as losers who are winning. And it was kind of like it was feeding into that feeling some people might have, you know what I mean? Like, no matter what I do, I'm a winner.
Yeah,
which is not true.
Yeah, well,
that is not true.
But Oracle said, yeah, Dominic Noble's reviews are awesome. Yeah, I love him. Yeah, Granther's Hammer says, Forrest Gump, the novel, which the movie is based on, Forrest was a racist simpleton. Yeah, he's basically N-word this, N-word that, you know, pretty much through the whole book. So that's another thing. Yeah. You know, so they, like, softened him quite a bit from the thing. But that was kind of funny, too, because as beloved as that movie is, not by me, but by, like, a large segment of a certain type of person. And, you know, it won, like, all the Oscars that year and everything like that, which, you know, a lot of people were pissed about because that was the year that Pulp Fiction was also nominated, which probably should have won. But so it's like this big beloved movie. And it's funny how it took like 20 years, really, for them to come around to making it, because I think the book came out like in the fucking 70s or something.
The backdrop is they got all this great music. I remember the soundtrack being really good. And all these great moments in the life of a boomer, all right? And in place where all these great moments in the lives of the boomers was actually done because some idiot happened to be.
Yeah.
So it did. I didn't understand what the message was. You know what I mean? I guess boomer values are basically the product of idiots. That's how I.
That kind of makes sense. That
boomer values are idiotic, or the products of an idiot.
Camp Guy said he never read the book. Yeah, the book is really not good, but it's crazy. It's crazy. Like, crazy shit happens.
I was just remembering, you know, the boomers of the time, their commentary about how great the movie was, and they're in the theaters reliving their fucking youth and their past, and it's all the narrative is being fucking dictated to them through the power of idiots. And then they walked away satisfied somewhere, and I go, yeah, boomers are fucking dumb. Boomers are fucking dumb. If they made a movie about everything that I believed in and cherished and all the great moments, and it was all because of some idiot, I'd be insulted. But not a boomer. Not a boomer. Boomer drank that up. Oh, yeah. Hand me the Margaritaville. Put on the Hawaiian shirts and go down to fucking Boca and shit. Oh, yeah. Yeah, man, it's really cool. You know, that's what you're dealing with.
Yeah. Yeah, Mango said bad books can make great movies from time to time. Yeah, I think that was kind of, I think that's kind of, I don't think they wanted to say that because, like, Winston Groom's dead, and I guess they didn't really want to, like, impugn the memory of a dead person. But, I mean, one of the execs did straight up say, like, it's not a very good book. Yeah. But there was apparently something about it that resonated because, like I said, even before it was published, I think they were knocking around the... You know, the idea of making it into a movie. Because it was like this one woman, and she read the book, and she just, like, loved the character and thought it would make a great movie, and spent, like, the next 20 years trying to get the fucking thing made.
Do you know what's another old boomer movie that was remind me a lot of this?
What's that?
A movie we saw in the theater that had, it was taking place here in Florida, had that old loser down there in fucking Miami.
Who, the Beach Bum?
Beach Bum, is that what it's called? Beach Bum? He's hanging out with Snoop Dogg, and his wife is fucking Snoop Dogg and shit.
That was Harmony Korine.
Yeah, that's might as well be Forrest Gump. That was that same fucking thing. Just a total worthless drunk.
Although I liked The Beach Bum, actually.
It was honest about what it was.
Well, yeah, it was self-aware.
It was, you know, it was just about this totally worthless drunk. And no matter what he does, he somehow wins.
Yeah, it's almost, I mean, that's not coming out of nowhere because there have been other movies and even stories, like going back hundreds of years like that, of just this kind of like moron that just like stumbles into greatness.
Yeah, he just keeps failing upwards.
But that is, that is like a narrative trope that has been like used before. So I do think that that's where they were getting
from. If you
want to
see, if you were not happy with Forrest Gump, all right, but want to see a film about some worthless motherfucker who just fails upwards, see that one. See Beach Bum, and it's a Florida movie. It's up there with fucking Pain and Gain and fucking Fight with My Family. You know what I mean? It is entertaining, but at least it's not trying to hold itself up as some kind of fucking great moralistic fucking. Because I look at Forrest Gump and I think it's a troll. It's trolling boomers, I think.
Yeah, that's possible.
I think the whole movie was a troll.
That's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, Forrest Renown said, life is not like a box of chocolates. A box of chocolates has a diagram telling you which one each one is. That's true, and I always thought that. And the thing about it is, like, all the famous lines from Forrest Gump the movie, none of those were in the book. Like, life is like a box of chocolates, blah, blah, blah. Like, all of that was the screenwriter, I think his name was Eric Roth or something like that.
You can go down to fucking Walgreens and get you a box of those fucking, all year round they're selling boxes of fucking chocolates for some event or another.
Whitman's.
It's Whitman's stuff.
Whitman's sampler.
And you can tell how many creams are in there by the price. If the price is low, that shit's creams. If the price is high, then that's
because creams are bullshit.
Creams are bullshit. Although they have gotten a little bit better over the years. I had got one of those sampler ones and it had some of those fruit creams. They were a lot better than they used to be when I was a kid. They were fucking terrible when we were a kid. They improved the flavors of them a little bit.
Because sometimes...
But it's not as good as a caramel.
Sometimes somebody would fuck with you. Like, if because my grandma switch the bitches around or, like, turn the tray around. So you thought... And then you thought, ooh, this is a nice coconut or it's one with nuts in it. And then you're like, aww.
Yeah.
You motherfucker.
They even made the jellies a little better. Remember they had some of them were, like, jelly?
Yeah.
They're a little better than they used to be.
I mean, I just kind of want caramels or nuts or coconut.
The nougat ones.
And otherwise
the nut ones.
Yeah. Get the fuck out. I don't want no fucking fruit cream in that chocolate. Fuck
off. Yeah, well,
if that
box is fucking 20-something bucks, then you know it's mostly caramel. If you go in there and it's the $6 box, that's cream, man.
And I'm sure there are some people that would be very, very happy to get the fruit creams because there are some weirdos in the world that like those. But
well, I got to admit, they're better than they were.
I don't like them.
They're a little chewier.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're a little chewier and the flavors are better than they used to be. Back in the 70s, they were horrible.
Everything was kind of like cheaper back then.
Yeah.
It's like, you know.
Yeah.
We just didn't know any better. I was going to say,
mass production back then.
Slasher Fred said, one of my favorite Steven Spielberg films is Duel. That is a great fucking movie.
Yeah. That was made for TV, though, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah.
Actually, he made quite a few. He made that. Was like his most famous one, but he made another one called, I think it was called Something Evil, and it was like a kind of haunted house-y, pagan-y, witchcraft-y type of thing.
Yeah.
And I remember that being pretty fucking good. I saw it a few years ago because I was like, what, Steven Spielberg?
Fourth Row Down mentions that movie's kind of like, that the movies you're talking about are kind of like Being There.
Although
Being There, I haven't seen it in a long time. I want to see it again. I remember it being a masterpiece.
Yeah, I really liked Being There. I remember
and
that.
And it had secret societies involved where you had like basically like globalist Masonic order of fucking super rich dudes that were picking presidents and shit. And it had a lot of symbolism of, you know, like kind of like Masonic orders and secret societies picking these presidents. And Chauncey ends up picking Chauncey. But it's some weird stuff where he walks across the water like a savior and shit. That was fucking weird too.
Yeah.
So I want to see it again.
Yeah, I feel like it's time for a revisit. I haven't seen that since probably... I think I rewatched it in the 90s at some point, but I haven't seen it again since then.
It was a trip, because part of the lessons were true, that appearances fucking go very far in the world. Because he was an idiot, but because a super rich guy was taking care of him, he had the mannerisms and the clothes of a rich person. And he was being taken care of by, you know, maids and servants and stuff. And he could pass himself off as a real rich fucking wise man. He was fucking homeless. He got kicked out of home. He'd walk up to just random black women and ask for food and shit like that because all the black women he knew fed him when he was being taken care of. It's a trip, man. It is a trip movie.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, and he goes and they're selling televisions and he's just sitting there watching TV in the fucking store windows and trying to turn the channels with his fingers and shit. Did he try to turn the channels with an imaginary?
I can't remember.
It's been a long time. I remember it being a good movie.
Camp Guy said, "Good road chase movie is The Hitcher with Rutger Hauer." We did a review of that not too long ago. And then Slasher Fred says, "If you guys ever see the movie Westworld, we did a review on that one as well a long time ago. The original Westworld. I think they did the series, which I kind of wanted to watch because it looked like it was good, but I haven't got around to it."
Camp Guy is saying, "In Being There, he was like a guru." No, they're fooling you. He was not a guru. He was an idiot. But because of the way he spoke and the way
people thought he was a guru,
people read into it as if he was a guru and would actually make decisions based on what he said that would work out. But it wasn't him. It was them. They were interpreting what he said, kind of like one of those holy oracles out of fucking Midsommar, where it's just an inbred person who can't think, and because they're unclouded by thought, they can just scribble some shit. You can interpret it.
Yeah,
the wise men can interpret.
Reading the chicken entrails.
Exactly the same thing. Just reading chicken entrails, because he would just go, "Business is like a plant. Planting seeds and things grow." But he was a gardener. That's all he was. He wasn't fucking business. Planting seeds
and
seeds
grow. Yeah, it sounded super deep. It was like some Deepak Chopra type of shit.
Right, Deepak Chopra.
Where you can just put a bunch of random words together.
And that's what Deepak Chopra does.
I know.
There's a program that uses
algorithms. Yeah, it's the Deepak Chopra, like, generator.
That'll generate a Deepak Chopra statement. And it'll sound just like
that. And it's indistinguishable. Because I spent a day, like, fucking with that one time because I just thought it was so funny. And I could not distinguish
between the real thing. It'd be like a super wise computer program and it fucking...
Yeah.
A cockroach is more intelligent than that computer program. But it sounds deep as shit. That's you reading into it.
Well, that's kind of like, well, and Oracle just pointed out, like a fake psychic doing a cold reading.
Exactly.
That's essentially what that is. They're just trying to pick up cues from shit that you say, your body language, like what you look like, you know, stuff like that. They're just trying to pick up cues from that and then trying to like lead you down to like certain directions. And you're kind of doing most of the work because you're supplying a lot more information to them than you think that you are. So that's kind of how that works out. So we talked about most of them, right? So there's four of them. I think season one, I can't remember all the movies they did on season one. I remember they did Dirty Dancing and I can't remember what the other ones were, but it's like, I really, really like this. I think I like The Toys That Made Us like a little bit better.
Yeah.
But The Movies That Made Us is really good too. Because like I said, even if it's a movie I don't really like all that much, it's still like really interesting. I'm interested, particularly movies that were like really, really popular. It kills me that even a movie that, you know, nowadays everybody's just like, oh, Jurassic Park, you know, oh, Back to the Future. It was like a foregone conclusion. But the fact that it took so long and went through so many, and like there was points where it wasn't going to get made and they had all this problem and it's like, you know, we're going to cut the budget. You can't do this. You can't do that. And the fact that it still came out as amazing as it came out is kind of awesome. Which in a way, like I said, that's kind of why seeing stuff like that makes me a little less harsh, I guess, on bad movies, because making a movie is like hard under the best circumstances. So when it's like, and all the problems that even the simplest movie production goes through, it's like for it to, it almost seems like for it to end up good is like a miracle. You know what I mean? It just seems like
too many fingers in the pot.
Yeah, because it just seems like there's so many ways for it to go wrong, and so when everything just comes together, and even as much as like chaotic as it was, because I think that they had what's his name on there from Seinfeld that was talking about Pretty Woman, because he was in Pretty Woman. That was like his first film role. And he was saying the set when they were filming Pretty Woman, it was Gary Marshall was the director. And he's like, we had no fucking idea what kind of movie we were making, because Gary Marshall would just be like, okay, let's do a serious take. Now let's do the same scene, but do it funny. And now let's do... So he's like, we had no idea like what this movie was going to end up like. And we just thought it was going to be a piece of shit because we were just doing like three or four different tones, you know, of each scene. And it's like, we didn't know how it was going to all cut together. And they're like, and the fact that they cut it together and it ended up being this massive hit was like, they were like, it was amazing. We didn't even remember making that movie because everything was just a big shit show. But so it's just goes to show that even when it's all like chaotic and fucked up and everything like that, every now and then something comes out good. Like I said, I can't say, I remember liking Pretty Woman when it came out. I'm not real big in rom-coms. I've seen some good ones, but I remember that one being good, but I haven't seen that one probably since the 90s, maybe.
Like, I just saw it on cable.
Yeah, I think I saw it on cable.
I didn't give a shit.
Yeah, I don't think I saw it in the theater or anything like that. So I don't really remember that much about it.
The Toys That Made Us is a better series.
It is. Well, because I'm kind of interested in, like, the manufacturing and, like, you know, them coming up with, like, the story behind all the toys and everything.
With movies, you know that there's personalities and you know that there's fucking stories involved with making a story. Okay, but how would you, you know, how you would never really think there's a story, say, behind making He-Man toys.
Yeah, but it's a fascinating
story. It's fucking
hilarious
that the fucking arguments and the fights over these goddamn He-Man toys and what started them even making a He-Man toy.
Boardrooms full of grown people arguing over a green tiger.
And then all the lies you have to tell to get He-Man done. They're fucking telling you like, oh, well, it's the comic books coming out. The movie, because in there,
what is
there,
it?
There's a comic
book. Totally.
Yeah. Comic book.
Hurry, somebody make a comic book.
Yeah. They lied their way, and fucking who would have thought that He-Man, which the new He-Man just came out, and people are critiquing that He-Man came into existence because they had a shitty, solid plastic, fucking tiger that they had to sell. That's what started it. Mm-hmm. Toy company had this molded tiger. It was about this big. And it didn't sell. And they just walked in and goes, we got to fucking sell that shit. Sell that.
We have like millions of these.
And they just went like, paint that bitch green. Put yellow stripes on it. And the other guy goes, put a saddle on it and make a man ride it. And that's how it started. And they're going, but dude, the scale is off. You know, look at how big that fucking man is next to that fucking thing.
Or the tiger was
that
like bigger,
look how big that tiger is next to that man. That's fucking, that's the size of a horse. And dude said, put a saddle on that thing. Put that man on there. And that's how fucking He-Man was born. And it was...
Then they had to, like, build a story around.
Yeah, and these are fucking, you know, 20-something-year-old, 30-year-old man children that totally understand the thinking of fucking little boys going, we're going to make him fucking badass. Roy that motherfucker out. They're making this action figure bigger and bigger, like super steroid, and they're going, the boys are going to love that. I have the power! Because your mom's fucking with you. Your mom's fucking with you. You can't make any decisions for yourself, so the little boys are going to say, I have the power! That's where power of Grayskull came from. What kind of power is it? It's the power of skulls, man. Skull power. Yeah. They're like that. And they're writing the shit down, brainstorming, drinking, thinking like, they're trying to think like 9-year-old boys.
Well, and it worked.
And it worked.
In the He-Man situation, uh-huh. It definitely worked.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't really hear about all the times that it didn't work.
The stories behind He-Man are fucking hilarious.
All of those shows were
all
good.
Of them.
There was a show, they did one about He-Man, they did one about G.I. Joe's, they did a Barbie one, they did, what was that other thing? Yeah. They didn't do Smurfs, that's not really a toy. There was, now I can't remember all the ones they did.
Barbie, they did fucking Transformers.
Barbie. Transformers, there
they
you go.
They did G.I. Joe.
Did they do, wasn't there a Strawberry Shortcake one?
I don't know. My Little Pony.
My Little Pony, yeah, there was a My Little Pony one.
And you see, then they, and here's another thing is that you... The behind the scenes toy making, these toy making guys, fucking ruthless back in the day. And they were just doing this shit just on the fly and coming up with this stuff on the fly and trying to make money. But they understood psychology real well. They were trying to, when they were building up He-Man, they had to build He-Man up into the ultimate fucking masculinity from the point of view of a fucking 8-year-old boy. Okay, that's as macho as you could get. And then they had a girl in another department says, well, we're going to make a female version of She-Ra. And they're like, no. And as soon as She-Ra
came
out,
no.
As soon as She-Ra came out, then all the fucking little boy street cred fucking vanished on He-Man. Sales fucking plummeted. That was it.
It's like, now my sister wants it.
Yeah, because fucking rule number one, children are sexist. Little children are sexist. That's right. They're just born that way.
My brother was 4 years younger, so he had like some pretty kick-ass toys. I liked his, we both had Legos, and we both really liked Star Wars toys as well.
Well, some of those toy lines were kind of neutral gender.
Yeah.
Not really neutral gender, they were just,
I mean, yeah,
just
I feel
good.
Like, I feel like Legos are pretty neutral.
Legos were kind of neutral. Anybody could run Legos.
I mean,
you could
build
toys,
whatever you wanted with
Erector
them.
Sets and the stuff, but those were kind of old school Erector sets when I was a kid. They had some of them were kind of cool, but they just couldn't compete with Legos. Legos were better.
Yeah, they were. Yeah. They had. I remember I had a kick-ass like Lego space shuttle set.
Yeah,
glow in the dark bricks.
Star Wars mostly appealed to little boys, but some little girls liked it because you had Princess Leia and shit.
What? I liked. I think my favorite my favorite Star Wars toys. I really loved the Dagobah playset. I was really into that. Yeah. And I really, really liked the Tauntaun and the little Han with his little blue parka on. Then the Tauntaun's like tummy open so you could like put Han in there and keep him warm? Or am I remembering that wrong?
He went in through the top so he could sit in there.
I know he could sit in there, but I didn't remember if the belly opened. Maybe I was just imagining. Maybe I wished that its belly
maybe
would open.
Maybe they had a special version, but mine.
Where all his little guts would come out and you could like stick it in there.
You also could get people to ride on a dewback, the lizard.
Yeah.
I had most of those toys. Except I didn't have the big walkers.
Yeah, I think...
I didn't have a big walker.
Did my brother have one of those?
By the time that was ready to come out, I was already old enough to not really be into the toys that much.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were something that just kind of sat around. I was moving on to other stuff.
So they did do... They did do a Toys That Made Us about Star Wars toys.
I think they did. Yeah, they did.
There was a bunch of those. But yeah, Netflix really killing it with these That Made Us shows. But
the
like,
toys
yeah.
are better than the movies.
Yeah, but the movies are good too. And like I said, I'm kind of like interested. I think that since I know more about movies, like some of the stories behind the movies, I already kind of knew some of the stuff. But the toy ones, you don't like know as much. Because like you said, you don't really think about all the stuff that goes into like them.
Yeah, like the idea that Barbie dolls were based on a German hooker doll.
Yeah.
That's all it was.
Yep.
And it was little dolls that guys gave to German call girls.
Yep.
Which I guess they didn't really have the dating scene, I guess, in Germany after the war.
Here, a doll for you.
So guys kind of paid for their girlfriends and fucking, you know, it was kind of like a girlfriend relationship. She might have a couple boyfriends. But if, you know, your favorite girlfriend, you gave her this little fucking doll. It was based on a German comic book character that was in the newspapers, and it was about little German call girls. I guess all you German hotties after the war, there wasn't much work, you know, so all you German hotties, they were girlfriends for hire. Kind of like a gigolo.
Yeah. What's a female equivalent of a gigolo?
Call girl.
Yeah.
Or escort.
A girl-galo?
Yeah.
A girl-galo.
They're, you know, the difference is the price. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's another thing, too. That's another thing about Pretty Woman is that I know it's a rom-com and they're, like, unrealistic, but it's, like, yeah. I don't think I've ever seen, like, a Hollywood hooker that looked anything like Julia Roberts or Laura San Giacomo.
If she looked like that, she would not be walking around on the street. She might be working up in Vegas or something like that. You know,
yeah.
Hanging out in casinos and shaking dice for people and shit like that and fucking, you know... If you won big that night, she's gonna go up to the hotel room with you. Money's not discussed, but you know that shit's not gonna be free.
Okay. That's true.
Yeah.
All right. You ready to wrap it up?
Yeah, we can shut it down.
Okay. So so movies that made us season two, four episodes, about 4 hours of entertainment, just dropped on Netflix. I don't know, it might have been a few days ago. I haven't checked Netflix in a couple of days, but I just saw it last night, so go check it out. It's there if you haven't seen it, and it's super fun. So I guess we're going to watch whatever we watch tonight, and we'll talk about that again tomorrow at the same time, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard. So have a good rest of your Monday, and we will see you guys again tomorrow. Bye.